Einsteigen, aufdrehen, losfahren. Mit dem neuen Volkswagen T-Roc bist du bereit für den großen Auftritt. Selbstbewusst und voller Power. Du steigst ein? Keine Kompromisse. Nur du und der Moment. Alles passt. Dein Sound, dein Drive, dein T-Roc. Rockt. Der neue T-Roc.
Coming up on Stu Does America. Here's the fun thought exercise. What would life be like without the media pumping exaggerated and scary headlines down our throats 24 hours a day? Maybe we wouldn't live in a society where we call the cops on each other for walking the dogs. Let's give that a shot. And what is the truth with a shooting in Georgia? Dan Andros joins us to break it down. And we have more annoying footage of Andrew Cuomo, which is just another way of saying we have more footage of Andrew Cuomo. You can always watch every episode of this show for free. Just go to YouTube, search for Stu, and I'll be the first one there. Wherever you are, comment, rate, and review often. Algorithms love your engagement, and that helps people realize that this little show exists. And wherever you are, when you click the five stars, yell five freaking stars as loud as you can. Or head to blazetv.com/Stu and subscribe to our full network. Make sure to use the promo code Stu because that's how they know you like this stupid show. And we'll take $30 off. Offer is ending soon, though, so, you know, get on it. The NFL schedule will be released tonight. At this point, I'm just hoping someone will throw a ball to someone else by the year 2025. Assuming, obviously, by then we can get approval of all the medical experts and, of course, President Kanye.
Stu Does America.
The media hypes the news for clicks. It's important to know the tricks that they use. We'll tell you about one of them in just a minute. But first, here's what happens when a coyote tries to eat a very prepared roadrunner.
In a previous life, before you were press secretary, you worked for the campaign. And you made a comment, I believe, on Fox, in which you said President Trump will not allow the coronavirus to come to this country. Given what has happened since then, obviously, would you like to take that back?
Well, first, let me note, I was asked a question on Fox Business about the president's travel restrictions. I noted what was the intent behind those travel restrictions, which is we will not see the coronavirus come here. We will not see terrorism come here, referring to an earlier set of travel restrictions. I guess I would turn the question back on the media and ask similar questions. Does Vox want to take back that they proclaim that the coronavirus would not be a deadly pandemic? Does the Washington Post want to take back that they told Americans to get a grip? The flu is bigger than the coronavirus. Does the Washington Post likewise want to take back that our brains are causing us to exaggerate the threat of the coronavirus? Does the New York Times want to take back that fear of the virus may be spreading faster than the virus itself? Does NPR want to take back that the flu was a much bigger threat than the coronavirus? And finally, once again, the Washington Post, would they like to take back that the government should not respond aggressively to the coronavirus? I'll leave you with those questions, and maybe you'll have some answers in a few days.
Wow, that was not pretty. Don't you hate it when your Acme products just blow up in your face? It happens all the time. Acme, do not buy the stock. The only thing the media does more poorly than reporting on the president is reporting on science. And that makes this pandemic the absolute worst of every world. When you constantly task yourself with trying to turn up the hype, you have to use every little trick in the book. One of these tricks is a longtime personal jihad of mine. It's now pretty much the only thing I think about. It's how the media misleads their readers and viewers constantly by not disclosing the difference between relative and absolute risk. In fact, I've been annoyed at this particular thing for so long, I have formed an elite force of public servants that have dedicated their lives to fighting to destroy it.
Bad boys, what you gonna do? What you gonna do when the relative versus absolute risk enforcement action squad comes for you? Bad boys, what you gonna do? What you gonna do when the relative versus absolute risk enforcement action squad comes for you?
Relative versus Absolute Risk Enforcement Action Squad is filmed on location with the men and women of Relative versus Absolute Risk Enforcement. All suspects are assumed guilty and will be tortured beyond the fullest extent of the law.
I'm gonna make the rules. You know, I have to be honest with you. The only reason I'm even doing this show is all for that bit. After I get that song on the air, what else do I have to accomplish in my career? Honestly, it's all downhill from here. There's a new study on the coronavirus out that is scaring the hell out of cancer patients everywhere. Patients with cancer appear more vulnerable to SARS-CoV-2 as a multi-year study during the COVID-19 outbreak. Oh my gosh, a multi-center study, excuse me. Jeez, I mean, as if people with cancer don't have enough to worry about already, now they're basically all but certain to die from coronavirus too. Double, triple, 200% increases, 300% increases, 400% increases. It's terrible. This is the evil brilliance of the way the media uses relative and absolute risk. And that is why we have an action squad ready to take care of it. While the media is warning you of these massively high percentage increases, here's what the story and the study actually says. If you don't have cancer, you have about a 5% chance of dying from COVID-19. If you do have cancer, you have about an 11% chance of dying. Now, everyone on Earth would look at this and say, okay, it's not nothing, but it's not a death sentence either. I mean, almost 90% of cancer patients that get COVID-19 still live. However, guess how many clicks you get on that story? None. If you read this study and you had cancer, you'd probably think, okay, my risk goes from 5 to 11%, so a 6-point increase. But that's the increase in absolute risk. And telling your readers about the change in absolute risk gets you no clicks at all. Instead, you can say the same thing by using the relative risk instead. So, you get the much sexier headline of COVID-19 causes 120% increase in death for cancer patients. Which one is right? 6% or 120%? Well, technically, they're both right. A 6% absolute risk increase and a 120% relative risk increase. But what number is actually more useful for people? What number gives you a better understanding of the situation? The truth is, if you have cancer, you have a slightly higher chance of dying. But overall, your risk is still low. What number encapsulates the truth of the story better, 6% or 120%? Obviously 6%, right? Yet I could find dozens and dozens of headlines talking about doubling the risk and all that. Literally none that talk about a 6 or 7% chance that you might die in increase in absolute risk. But it doesn't end there. Instead of saying that doubling risk is good enough to terrify your cancer-stricken family members, most of the stories went even bigger. Certain cancer patients 3 times as likely to die of COVID-19, says the study. Patients with certain cancers are nearly 3 times as likely to die of COVID-19, study says. Coronavirus is 3 times more likely to kill patients with certain cancers, study says. Wait, didn't we just see headlines that said it was only double? Now it's 3 times. This is horrific. It's the same study. It might just be time to put grandma down. This world is too cruel. Here, the media is telling you the exact same story of the same study, and instead of a boring 6% increase or even doubling, they've decided to go for tripling. How? Here's the graph. Once again, you see the chances of dying with COVID-19 and no cancer were about 5 or 6%. But if you isolate only cancers that have spread throughout the body, your chances of death go up to about 22%. Once again, this is intentional. What the study actually says is you have a higher chance of dying from COVID-19 if you have cancer that has spread. And while the difference is significant, about 4 out of 5 people still survive it. But your chances go up by about 16 percentage points in terms of absolute risk. You tell the story that way. Or you can tell the story this way, that your chance of death has more than tripled, and you should just pull out a shotgun now and save yourself the lengthy pain and suffering. That's relative risk. And of course, the media exclusively tells you the higher number because they want you terrified. In this case, they cherry pick the scariest comparison to stick in the headline as well. Because yes, technically, the study shows you're 3 times as likely to die with certain types of cancer. The same exact chart also says you are less likely to die with other types of cancer. If you have non-metastasized cancer, the study actually showed you only have a 4% chance of dying. That's less than the 5% with no cancer at all. Yay, cancer! If we want to cherry pick and use relative risk, we can do it as well here and come up with a headline of our own. Study: certain cancers cut risk of death from coronavirus. We can do that. Of course, having cancer surely doesn't really help you survive COVID-19. It's just noise in the data. But so what? We can get clicks all day long with stuff like that. In fact, give me the other chart. This is the second one here. Yeah, look at that. We can go two ways with this one. Patients with certain cancers are more than five times as likely to die from COVID-19. We can do that. Or we can go the other way. Breast cancer cures Wuhan flu. Because I look at the chart. It says those with breast cancer never die. They are invincible. Maybe COVID-19 cures breast cancer. Who knows? The bias never stops. Whenever you see some news source telling you that you're 1,000,000% more likely to die from something, realize what they're almost always doing. Choosing the relative risk to pump up the big numbers and terrify you and your grandma. Remember, these choices are being made about a story like this, and this isn't even political. Imagine what they're doing when Donald Trump is the target. By the way, can I tell you how much I love you guys? Everybody always says, hey, you need red meat. Just stay on the surface. What's trending in the news? There's no way your audience is going to want to hear about that. Relative versus absolute risk? What are you even talking about? And I say, there might be something to that, but hold on. You don't really understand this little club we're building over here. Next time some agonizing coworker starts riffing on wonders of Scandinavian socialism or that crazy study they read on Pinterest about how French fries cause autism or whatever, we're the ones who know the truth. And you know what? We don't even interrupt. We don't interrupt and set you straight right away. Oh, no. Oh, no. We sit back. We let you ramble. We let it go on and on and on. We sit there like a predator in the grass, motionless, waiting for your stupid points to walk right by. And then, and only then, do we speak up and put you out of your misery. And then again, maybe we don't. Sometimes we might just pause and nod and walk away in silence. But we wait just long enough to let you know that we know that you don't know. That's the little club we're building here. Conservanerds, unite! But that's another story for another day. For now, I don't want to take the focus away from the first responders, the fine men and women holding the line against misuse of relative and absolute risk. They are the few, the proud, the relative versus absolute risk enforcement action squad.
What you gonna do? What you gonna do when the relative versus absolute risk enforcement action squad comes for you? Bad boys, bad boys. What you gonna do? What you gonna do when the relative versus absolute risk enforcement action squad comes for you?
Relative versus Absolute Risk Enforcement Action Squad is filmed on location with the men and women of Relative versus Absolute Risk Enforcement. All suspects are assumed guilty and will be tortured beyond the fullest extent of the law.
So stupid. Moms are working a lot harder than usual this year without a single day off. If you have kids that are being homeschooled, you know this. The kind folks at Bouqs, that's short for bouquets, have chosen to honor our mothers for Mother's Day all month long, from now until May 31st, get incredible savings on gorgeous flowers. And if one day of flowers isn't enough, consider the Bouqs flower subscription service, saving you about 30% on bouquets. And also, you pay zero shipping every single time. It's really brilliant. You don't have to worry about it. You do it one time, and you get the amazing brownie points going every month with absolutely zero effort. I love it. They also have their gift trio for 3 months of the most beautiful, freshest blooms that last the longest. These flowers are always fresh and they always have the best arrangements, so you look like you actually have some taste for once. I need their help. Celebrate Mother's Day all this month with Bouqs. You can just head to Bouqs.com/stew, Bouqs.com/stew. And be sure to remember the stew part, because that's how they know you like this stupid show and you'll get 25% off. BOUQS.com/stew, and we'll get you 25% off your entire order for the rest of May. Maybe you can't give mom a hug right now, but you can brighten up her day with the Books Company. 25% off at Books.com/stew. Leading the non-coronavirus news right now is the tragic story of Ahmaud Arbery. He's a jogger in Georgia who was shot and killed after being mistaken for a burglar. It's a bizarre story. The internet is up in arms, and even Joe Biden took enough no-dos to stay awake long enough to condemn the incident, which is, I mean, that's a challenge. Here to tell us more about the story is the managing editor of FaithWire, which you should absolutely subscribe to on YouTube right after you're done subscribing to my channel. Dan Andros. Dan, we spoke on the phone this morning, and you were kind of heated on this story. Can you kind of tell us what exactly happened?
Well, first of all, what I'm frustrated at is the fact that we seem to be falling into the same trappings that we do as a country every time. We barely have any facts on this case whatsoever, and everyone immediately wants to take sides and jump to conclusions. Now, this happened back in February, and what happened was Ahmaud Arbery, who is a young man and allegedly, according to his family, was a frequent jogger working out, was apparently jogging in the neighborhood. A woman in the neighborhood that he was jogging in called police because she said she saw someone in a vacant property. There was a house under construction in the neighborhood, and she said, you know, it's a black male wearing a white shirt. That's what he was wearing. So she calls cops, and you know, next thing you know, these other guys in the neighborhood, Gregory McMichael and his son Travis, were also on the lookout for the criminals because apparently there'd been a rash of house invasions recently. So anyway, so after all of that, that's the background. These guys just decide they're going to try to chase him down while he's out for his jog, which again, his family claims that he was jogging, but. They say they're going to chase him down. So they get their guns, they get in trucks, they try to corner him. He just keeps on running because, I mean, who would stop for a couple of guys, you know, with guns in a truck? So they head him off again. And then that's where you see the video where there's someone filming, and it was a third person who was involved in trying to apprehend this guy. And so it ends tragically as they have guns and, you know, he doesn't know what to do and he makes a lunge for them. There's a tussle, the gun goes off. And he dies right there in the street tragically. So a horrible situation where it seems to me that these two guys were trying to enact some vigilante police work, investigation work, and it just went horribly awry.
You know, the video is out there, as Dan mentioned. You know, it was a story that happened in February, and it was certainly a big story in the area. It's blown up nationally because of this video, as a lot of these stories tend to do. We're not going to show you the video here. You can go find it if you want to find it. I do everything I can to try to avoid things like this if I can possibly do it. I have enough death and destruction on my mind right now. It's not a fun time. The story, however, is a difficult one because I think people tend to kind of fall into their patterns here. This one seems a little bit more complicated. It might not be a party line, maybe a pro Second Amendment versus police justice type of thing. It's not really on those lines. Is that right, or am I reading it wrong?
I think you're right, and people are trying to make it that way. The narrative is that it's a young black man, again unarmed, gunned down, and. There is a case to be made here, I think, that we don't know, but they're calling it a lynching. I mean, I don't know that mm-hmm. that's the case, but it certainly would, you know, you have a woman looking out her window, seeing a kid in the neighborhood and calling police on him. And, you know, it's one of those circumstances where you say, well, if it was a white guy, would they be calling cops on a white kid running around out for a jog and maybe, you know, walking into a house under construction. I mean, he was just wearing a T-shirt and short. Well, what was he taking? Was he taking furniture? Like, was he taking what was he doing? Like, I don't understand. I mean, I think all of us as kids have wandered onto a house under construction at some point. I know I did. So it does seem like, you know, maybe there could be a case there. I mean, certainly unprovable at this point that it was, just a hate race attack. But, you know, you certainly can say, well, you know, would this have happened if the shoe was on the other foot? And And where, to me, where the issue lies, you know, people are trying to say that self-defense is one of the things that I've heard a lot, you know, because he did, you know, he did lunge at him and try to go for him. But it's like, what are you doing out in the street with making an armed blockade in your truck and trying to tell somebody to stop? You know, if I'm scared for my life and there's two guys with guns and I don't know what they said. You couldn't tell what they said. But maybe they threatened him. And so if you're going to, what are you going to run down the middle of the street with two guys with guns? They'll just shoot you right down. So maybe he thought that was his only option. So to me, the self-defense thing, once there's a tussle, it's very flimsy ground, in my opinion, because, you know, you're the one out there starting this whole thing. And what's the kid supposed to do?
Yeah.
So, you know,
yeah, you know, Malcolm Gladwell's last book, focused in on this type of incident. It was an incident in Texas with a black woman and a driver and a police officer. And his point of the book, and the point of the book overall, is that so many of these problems that we have come from the basic idea that we don't read people right. We don't read situations correctly, because in the end, we all kind of think we can pick things up quickly. And it's also, it's in the end, very difficult. Like he used the example of Amanda Knox, who appeared to be, you know, laughing after this murder. And everyone thought, oh, she can't possibly be mourning her friend. And, you know, like you investigate it and you kind of see, well, actually, she sort of was like that. It was it's a weird quirk of hers. She's done, you know, in sad situations, has done this several times. In this case, it seems to have a situation that is similar to the one he highlights about the driver and the officer, in that both sides think they're kind of doing the right thing. You can understand at some level, and I would agree with you that it's never good advice to go out and try to be essentially a police officer to solve a crime. Though I will say he was a former police officer, so this isn't like us, right? Am I right about that? Or he worked for a district attorney, I know, at some point?
I think he worked for the DA, in some capacity. I don't think he was a regular foot officer, but he did work for law enforcement on some level.
So he had some background there at some level. They went out, look, if someone's harassing your neighborhood, you think you know who it is, like, it's a sensible thing to go after that person. On the other side, it's a sensible thing that if two people, no matter what color they are chasing you in a truck with guns, you might think something bad's about to happen. And that struggle plays out in the worst possible way here, where it's actually the son who winds up doing the shooting, right? They get in some sort of scuffle, and it's the son who actually does it. I don't know how you get past that, though. You know, I think human beings act on instinct. It's that fight or flight sort of instinct that we all have. And when you combine that with a lack of information, it's not guns. I don't know that this, it could be race, we don't know, but it doesn't usually turn out to be race either. It turns out to be a fundamental misunderstanding between two people.
Yeah, and I think, look, I think we let the facts play out, and there is some frustration, though, and I can understand on the side of the victim's family, because they were told, his mother was told initially, that he was, like, caught doing a burglary. And, you know, that's not really what happened. Someone called in. We don't know who this woman is that called in and, like, what actual evidence she had. Right. That he was committing some kind of burglary. I mean, it could have just been one of these horrible calls that have nothing, you know, like you said, completely misreading the situation. We have no idea what her basis for this call is, but people want to take that and run that. Well, he was out there committing problems, so look what you're going to get. And then to me, I mean, it makes it even more egregious that the father and son have some experience in law enforcement. It just seems like there are a million other ways you could have gone with this other than try to set up a blockade and chase someone down multiple times in the road with weapons. You know, you could have followed him slowly. You could have just, you know, walked up to him just, you know, and if call he kept the, going, no, fine. But yeah. You call the cops police at that point. There are a million things and one things that you could have done other than try to take your gun and take justice into your own hands. Because, listen, at the end of the day, this kid was not posing a threat to anyone at that particular time. And no piece of property with a kid running away down the street is worth this effort to stop. It's just not worth it. And so now a kid's dead and we don't get to hear his side of the story because of it.
You know, I think a lot of times we get to that point in our lives where something's going wrong and you feel like it's unjust. And you say, you know what? I got to do something. Somebody's got to do something. I swear that's the moment you make the worst decisions because you think that, like, sometimes you don't have to do something. A lot of times, like, you know, when you talk about property, like, you don't want to have someone stealing your property. And if it look person's threatening your family, I'm always going to stay on the side of someone who even if, you know, sometimes it's hard to tell. But if you believe your family is at risk, that is one thing. I think the act of leaving and going after them is going to wind up being a problem here. And it does seem that the police department, which he had close relationships with multiple police departments in the area, did not exactly give the full information away to the family. And that's why this seems to be bubbling up. The crazy part about this as well is that because of COVID-19, the courts aren't even open. So it looks like it's not even until June where any of this can come in front of a court. These situations bubble up usually really quickly once these things go down. So hopefully that's not the case. I will say the one good thing about quarantine, a lot of these types of stories have not been happening, right? Like we haven't had everyone just at home. And I don't know, probably terrible things are happening in your house, but we don't know about them. And that's always positive. Dan, let me take a quick break. We'll come back on the other side with a little bit more. Back in a second. You can always get every episode of the show for free by going to YouTube and just search for Stu. I'm the first one there. You can also search for Faithwire and get Dan Andros and his program. Dan, I want to go on to something a little bit lighter here in a second, but one more thing on this case in Georgia. There is an argument to be made that these people suspected a crime was being committed. And if you sit back and you let somebody run over your neighborhood over and over again, and you know, we don't know if this guy knew or thought this was the criminal or not. I guess there could be some evil racism going on here, and we don't know that. But I mean, most of the time, this turns out to be a person who may have mistaken the guy. Maybe he was the burglar. We don't even know. And we don't know that. But what happens here, I think, a lot of times is that people want to do what's right for their community. And this guy may have come out and taken a step, even if there was a mistake made. Can you blame him for going out and trying to make his neighborhood a safer place?
Well, yeah, that's a defense that I've seen a lot of people take so far as this, you know, this law about making citizens arrests. And, I'm not a lawyer, but I mean, I would think the spirit of that law is more of this type of situation when you actually encounter someone in the act of a crime. You know, they're stealing someone's purse, they're beating someone up, or they're in your house and they're stealing. So you catch them in the act and you're able to hold them at gunpoint and say, you can't go anywhere and you won't get in trouble for doing that. I think where these guys are in a bit of trouble here is that they didn't have any proof other than, you know, potentially a call from a neighbor or just knowing that there were some other things going on and seeing a kid in the neighborhood and then just trying to chase him down and conduct these investigations on their own, creating a mini armed blockade. So I think they went just like probably the idea is okay to try to protect your neighborhood, but they just took it, you know, 15 steps too far, I think, in my opinion, by, you know, arming themselves and just getting out there and trying to chase people down, especially when they didn't have any confirmation that was the person.
Yeah, I do feel like that is a typical thing that gets repeated over and over again, in which you when you have that point where you're just like, I'm just sick of it, I got to do something, that instinct, which is understandable, a lot of times leads you to poor judgment. You know, like that, there are certainly times to take stands on principle. Usually when you're putting, I mean, you know, this guy's his son, right? In a very risky situation, you're bringing your son out for something like that. Yeah. You know, look, it doesn't feel like there's any good parts of the story. At the end of the day, you know, somebody's dead and you know, somebody else might be going to prison and God only knows what happens to the community. We have enough strife right now, so let's just skip that part of it and just get to justice and hope this is okay. Speaking of justice, this is different totally because we need something to be a little bit happy about before the end of the show here. There's a list that just came out of the top 10 most rabid fan bases in the country. And I have massive problems with it. Massive problems with it, Dan. Let me run through some of these. Number 10 are the Boston Red Sox. Now, the Red Sox have a pretty freaking rabid fan base. The fact that they're number 10 leads me to believe we've got some real superstars coming up. I hate the Red Sox, but they've got a great fan base.
Yeah, they've got an incredible fan base. And, you know, obviously one of the older franchises has been around for quite some time. And even in all those years where they didn't win and, you know, still everyone's showing up there all the time and games are sold out all the time. Them at 10 is kind of surprising.
All right. Number 9, the Pittsburgh Penguins. I don't have much to say on the Penguins because honestly, it's hockey And so I don't know. Is it even? Yeah. Does it count? I don't know.
I mean, if the people are showing up to the games, I would say it's a rabid fan base, because anybody who's willing to show up for hockey games regularly,
it's a fair point.
Sorry if you like hockey.
Oklahoma City Thunder, I'm totally behind on this list. They're number 8 on the list, and they have shown like rabid fandom, even when they're not that good. You know, it's a smaller city. It's their one team. I think that they are fantastic. And let me pair it with this one. They put at number 7 the Golden State Warriors. Now, the Warriors are a team that have been around forever. I think a lot of people had forgotten they were in the league as of 10 years ago.
Yeah.
They're very good, yes, but I think they're confusing winning with a rabid fan base.
Yeah, this is recency bias all the way. Mm-hmm. I doubt those seats were packed in the days before Steph Curry lighting it up there. And by the way, speaking of Oklahoma City Thunder, first of all, they got nothing else to do in Oklahoma. Second of all, okay, maybe they got a few things to do, but not a lot of pro sports teams mm-hmm. going on. But isn't it weird to think Kevin Durant was actually in a Supersonics uniform at one time?
That is bizarre. I mean, that team with Harden and Durant and Westbrook, how do they not win like 9 straight championships? I don't know.
I don't know.
Okay, number 6, Seattle Seahawks. Okay, big crowd. Everyone knows, the 12th man's thing.
Yeah,
12th
man, yep.
Number 5 obviously should be number 1, the Philadelphia Eagles. I mean, really, what needs
That's
to be
fair.
Said? About that. They do have very passionate.
Passionate, perhaps a little bit emotional before thinking things through a lot of times. Just being honest here, this is the city I'm living in right now, right north of Philadelphia. So
yeah,
I say that with all the love in the world.
And as an Eagles fan, I can vouch for that. We are insane. But it's a little bit better since 2017. There's a little bit of the edges off,
right.
But still, I think that's a fair one at number 5. Number 4, the Pittsburgh Steelers. Sure. Okay, I mean, like, that's a big crack. You get the towels and everything. I can see it. I can see I can see Pittsburgh being up there. Number 3, the New Orleans Saints.
Bags on the heads. I mean, I feel like they abandoned them back in the day, right? I mean, they had the paper bags over their heads.
They did. And they went through a really tough time. They came back to the stadium. I get that. But I don't know. I don't think of this. I mean, they're loud, but I don't think of the Saints as that big on the list. Number 2 is the worst part of the entire list, though. And it's the same problem we have with Golden State. They list at number 2 the New England Patriots. Now, if anyone's ever been to Boston or anywhere in New England, you know they care about the Red Sox. They don't care about the Patriots. The Patriots winning Super Bowl.
The Celtics. I mean, for the love of Pete, I mean... Are the Celtics number 1 on this list? Because that's absurd. First of all, how difficult is it to be a fan of the Patriots when they win every single year? Wow. Congratulations. You showed up to watch them win another Super Bowl. Wow. Great job. You are a rabid fan base. And you're so rabid, you built the stadium way out in Foxborough because you didn't want it anywhere near Boston.
It's true, though. I remember going to the first Eagles-Patriots Super Bowl, which sadly the Eagles lost. As it's going through, like, I'm living and dying with every play. Patriots fans are basically falling asleep. I mean, they've won like 19 in a row. They barely even know what's going on. We know a lot of Boston sports fans. They care about the Celtics. And really, number 1, I would say the Red Sox maybe. Patriots are absolutely their third favorite team. You know what? The Bruins are honestly up there, too. I would not say, the Patriots probably show up on these metrics well because, they got a lot of followers and Tom Brady's there and they've won all these Super Bowls. But that's built. You're building your foundation on bandwagon fans there. A lot of people come to the Patriots because they're the best. I think that's a really misguided one. I will say, however, I was very happy that number 1 will not be the Dallas Cowboys. Number 1,
America's team didn't get it?
No, they did not get it. Number 1 will not be the Los Angeles Lakers. None of the teams, none of them, is not even the New York Yankees. None of the teams that I would not want to be on the top of this list. Number 1, and I think it's a fair one, the Green Bay Packers. It's negative 85 degrees every time they play a game.
Fair.
They actually are shareholders in the team with really no rights. They just paid money to the team for no reason. They're an authentic, original NFL team. I would love the Eagles to be number 1, but I think the Packers, that's a pretty good choice.
Yeah, that is great. And look, I am most happy about that choice because, as you said, it is not America's team, which was a fraud from the beginning, by the way. Mm-hmm. That was a ploy, a marketing ploy by the NFL to just call them America's team. And then they slap them on TV and we all have to suffer every year watching 15 Dallas Cowboys games on national TV because
it's a scam.
Apparently they think they're America's team, but obviously, yeah, it's a scam. So obviously this, this particular survey is 100% fact. And we go by that.
That's all we can do. Dan Andros, faithwire.com, go on his YouTube channel and subscribe there as well. And we'll have more in just a second. So if you missed yesterday's show, Andrew Cuomo was the focus, the Cuomo catastrophe. Again, you can get that on YouTube. Just search for Stu, and I'm the first one there. Cuomo catastrophe is the title of the show. I think you want to see that one because it's about nursing homes and all the terrible things that are going on at nursing homes in New York, particularly hard hit, largely because of a policy that's been passed by, it was just basically a health department directive from Cuomo and his administration, where they forced people who had COVID-19 into nursing homes and then did not allow nursing homes to test for COVID-19, did not want them to discriminate against COVID-19 positive patients. You need to see that whole thing if you missed it yesterday. He's really been irritating me lately. I don't know if you can notice that. He's just grating. It's nails on a chalkboard just to see him. In fact, this moment where, now remember this, he's in the middle of this scandal where thousands of people are dying in nursing homes. He's going to go make a big nursing home speech because he's trying to turn this around and blame the owners of the nursing home for this. And what does he do? He pulls up in his ridiculous, I mean, look, it's a nice car. It's a GTO, right? And it's in really good shape. But I mean, you're going to make this speech, you know, to a group of people that have been victimized by your policies and your stupid little swagger getting out of your fancy car. As all these people are struggling, we have 30 some odd million people out of work. I don't begrudge a guy a nice car. I want to have a better car than I have. I hope to eventually have the greatest car in the universe. I don't care. It doesn't bother me to have a nice car. But man, is he irritating. By the way, it's not just that he screwed up New York and New Jersey and Connecticut and parts of Pennsylvania and Boston, which we all kind of know about at this point. It does seem that it was pretty much New York behind this entire thing. Now, I can say that as a New Yorker. I was born in New York. It's okay. I can say these things. I will say, though, it is it's interesting. They do this behind, you know, these scientists are looking at this and they're seeing really unique genetic fingerprints on the different strains of what we like to call here the Chinese Wuhan flu. And what happens is in New York, they see a very different strain that they're seeing in the West Coast. There's theories here that that is the reason why the West Coast has done so much better with it. At least part of it is because it's not as aggressive a strain. That being said, they've tested around the country trying to figure out where this stuff is coming from. Now, here's the northeastern states. And this would be the what you'd expect. The red in this particular graph from the New York Times shows the amount of the virus that was from the East Coast New York City strain. Connecticut's 81%, New Jersey 93%, Maryland 92%, New York 94%, Massachusetts 94%. What about the West Coast? How about them? Well, the states on the West Coast, it's not exactly how you'd expect. In fact, it's about split in a lot of these cases. Washington was 53% West Coast strain. However, California was 50% East Coast strain. Oregon was 50% East Coast strain. And Alaska, because they have four people, all four from East Coast strain. So 80% or so of the virus from the East Coast. Here we go with another one. These are other Western states, though, and this is where it gets really crazy. Wyoming, 69% East Coast strain and only 31% West Coast. Texas, 70% East Coast, only 4% West Coast strain. I guess the rest is they couldn't identify it. Arizona, 84% East Coast. Utah, 89% East Coast. And Idaho, 98% East Coast strain. So what it appears is that a lot of people came in to New York, and a lot of this was having no testing. We didn't know what was going on. There are excuses to be made here. But people went to New York, spread across the country, spread that East Coast strain all over the place, and now we're all dealing with it. So is it fair to blame Andrew Cuomo for that? Yes. Yes, it is. It's totally fair. I also want to point you in the direction of something else that we need to be doing for a monologue coming up soon. It's the collapse of recycling. Now, you might say, hey, why are you smiling when you say that? I can't help myself from smiling when I say it. I don't know why. The recycling thing is really irritating to me. I hate separating my garbage. I'm an adult here. He's separating my garbage. What year is this? 2020 is separating our garbage. I don't want to put my hands in my garbage. I'm washing out used containers. What country is this, man? Not the United States. Well, here's the issue. China used to take a lot of our recycling. And so they decided one day, you know what? We're not going to take it anymore. China is the one who was taking all of our recycling. We would pay them to recycle it for us. And we would act as if there was an environmental benefit, especially when you wash out a plastic container. There is no environmental benefit whatsoever. Now there really isn't, because they're not even recycling it. We're sending it over to China for a long time. They were basically just dumping it into the ocean anyway. And now we can't find any place to sell it, to send it, because it's getting too expensive. There's not enough places. So what's happened is we're just throwing it out in a lot of areas. Now, an extra added pressure to the recycling industry is the fact that because of oil prices, because of the current financial situation we're in, which is, you know, overtly a disaster, the cost for new plastic is going through the floor. So now recycled plastic is way, way more expensive than, as they call it, virgin plastic, never been defiled by a human being. Look at this chart. Look at these graphs. This is not good. And again, I know if you're listening on podcast, you might not be able to see these because you don't have magical powers. But I will say they're all going down. Every place where you could buy plastic, it's now cheaper than it was, which makes a lot of sense. This economy, until it turns around, this is going to be the reality of the situation. We did get another report this morning, over 3 million people who are out of work. At this point, I'm just blaming the government. You know, like the beginning, like, look, these are unforeseen circumstances. There's no way to get these programs turned around fast enough. There shouldn't be people who are still laying people off 6, 7, 8 weeks into this. This is what these programs were designed to stop. And the fact that it's still happening to people, it just shows how poorly these things were constructed and put together. We're going to get into that a little bit. Tomorrow is a coronavirus-free show. We'll get into it on radio tomorrow. How about that? And we also get the horrible, at least what's expected to be a horrible unemployment rate. Not all, it doesn't have all of this priced in yet, but they're expecting into the double digits considerably. We'll have the details on tomorrow's show. It's going to break right as we begin the radio show tomorrow. We'll have those details for you and more on tomorrow's radio program. We've been talking about flattening the curve quite a bit, okay? You get these exponential rises, you got to flatten that curve. Then you may bring it down a little bit, maybe. That's what we're trying to do with COVID-19. The COVID-19 pounds, that is a whole nother story for a lot of people. I have hit the wall here where I'm just like, I got to stop this. I put on way too much weight over this thing. I've been using it as an excuse the entire time. Time to turn this thing around. Fast blast is a great solution. Even before this insanity, intermittent fasting was kind of something you might have heard a little bit about. I've really liked doing it because, you know, you don't have to do it all the time. You can have those days, maybe you go off of your diet a little bit, but you can kind of go back and you have one hardcore day. That's the way to do it. Fast Blast has these smoothies, too, where they can kind of walk you through and make it really easy. So you have just a little bit of food, keep you full, but they taste really, really good. Do your own homework. Go to fastblast.com/blaze. They can walk you through a whole program on how to do this the right way. Plus, you can have these smoothies as well. Fastblast.com/blaze. Get started today with Fast Blast for a healthier, happier, and smaller you. Tomorrow, coronavirus-free Fridays. It's Freedom Friday. Maybe we'll even go out to dinner afterwards. All of us together. Just come on over. We'll ride in the same car. We'll see you tomorrow.